Good morning, everyone. I knew that I wasn't feeling good when in the middle of the night last night, and then I thought, well, it'll be one of those mornings when I can get up and go running, and then I'll feel better, which is often what I test to see if I can feel better. Got up, started to get ready for running, and all of a sudden I felt like I was going to faint, and so I stumbled back to bed, fall into bed, and I... Twilight used to be being dramatic, so I said, I feel like, and as a good male would say, I feel like I'm dying. And so she looks at me, and the first thing she says is, well, you look like some of the patients at work, and when your wife works at hospice, that's never good. So I will say, a little bit later when I could actually get up, I did look like I was death warmed over, so... Twyla's two commands for me today. I'm high on drugs right now, so in case I go completely crazy, you'll know why. Twyla's two commands were, number one, don't get excited while you're preaching today. And number two, before you faint, please get to the side. So that's what we're going to try to do today. I don't know which one is going to be harder not to do. I do feel a little better, although I still don't feel great, so we'll see. I don't want any of you to have what I got, I will say that. Okay, today we are looking, you're going to see that in the bulletin I was a little ambitious and I thought we could get through Genesis 43, 44, and 45. We're not, so we're going to try to go through 43 and 44 today. Couple of things that I wanted to go back and touch base with from last week. Number one, Mel had noted in his Bible that said that it was actually 20 years, which is true. It was 20 years between the time that Joseph saw his brothers, because if he started his ministry at 30, which would have been the 13 years, and then it was 7 years of good times, so that puts it at 20 years. Most people believe that his family came to Israel in the first year of famine, so that would have been the 20th or 21st year. I hope you also, I did not point it out, but I hope you also noted that both Joseph and Jesus started their ministry at 30, that type of Christ again. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that Joseph gave his brothers their money back. And so just like Jesus provides us with a gift of salvation for free, so his brothers got their bread of life for free as well. Now, at the very end of last week, we had gotten where they had gone back to Jacob and they told Jacob everything that had happened. And Jacob was like, huh. Why did you ever tell them that we had a brother? And they were afraid because they had gotten their money back. And then Reuben offered, he said, you know, if we go and Benjamin doesn't come back, I'll give you two to my sons in their place. And Jacob says that under no circumstances, no way, no how will Benjamin ever go to Egypt. So that's where we're going to pick up. Now, I believe that this family had made an uneasy peace. They had agreed. When we read the beginning today, I think this is, I don't know if your family has these arguments, but this sounds like an argument that you have over and over again, and everybody knows what the other person's going to say, and you all go through it routinely because everybody knows the other person's side. And so I think they came to this kind of uncomfortable peace, but every so often the things would come up and they would go through the same thing over again and they would all say the same thing that they did every time. I think that Jacob, so remember, Jacob and his boys do not know how long this famine is going to last. So here's my conjecture. I think that Jacob thought he could outlast this. I don't think he ever planned to have anybody go back to Egypt to get Simon. I think figured Simon, he basically said the last time, Simon is no more. And so I think in his mind, he was never going back. And so I'm sure, I don't know this, but I wondered too if he was praying, Lord, please make this famine be a short one. And the Lord didn't. It continued on. And again, the part, you all, that is interesting to me is that if that was truly his prayer, he's praying for something that God has something even greater. God doesn't want just a short famine. He wants him to be restored to his beloved son and for his family to be saved and, as I'm going to argue today, to preserve the bloodline of his people. Now, Let's start in verse 43. And again, listen to this first part of 43 and see if you think this argument has happened over and over again. Now, the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go back and buy us a little more food." Judah said to him, "The man warned us solemnly, 'You will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother along with us, we will go down and buy food for you. But if you will not send him, we will not go down.' Because the man said to us, 'You will not see my face again unless your brother is with you.'" You all, this sounds like Judah's heard this before. I'm sure his dad said to him, "Boys, go down and get a little more grain." Judah, by the way, Judah becomes the spokesman. This is Judah's redemption Sunday. Judah says, "Listen, Dad, we've told you this 1,000 times. The man has said to us, 'We can't get grain unless you have Benjamin. If you give us Benjamin, we can take him down and we'll go. Otherwise, Dad, we're not going.'" By the way, verse 6 does something interesting. It changes his name from Jacob to Israel. Moses, in writing this, changes his name from Judah in verse 3 to Israel in verse 6. Many people believe that this means that from this point forward, Jacob is now acting in his redeemed, restored way of Israel rather than his earthly, fleshly way of Jacob. Not verse 3. It was the end of the last chapter that he was Jacob. Israel asked, "Why did you bring this trouble on me by telling the man you had another brother?" So if you've ever been in an argument and you're losing and you have this sore point, you bring it back up. So he's here's Dad. "Come on, guys, why did you put me in this mess? They've done this before." And so then what? They reply, "Dad, how many times do we have to tell you? We got caught off guard. The man questioned us closely about ourselves and our family. 'Is your father still living?' he asked us. 'Do you have a brother?' We simply answered the questions. How were we to know? He would say, 'Bring your brother down here.'" Right? Tried old argument. We've heard this. How many times do you accuse us of this, Dad? Same answer as the last time. We didn't know it was going to happen. Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy along with me." He refers to him as a boy, but he's probably 28 to 33 years old. He has boys of his own. He's not a boy. He's a man. He is probably late 20s, early 30s, and probably married and has children. Judah said to his father, "Send the boy along with me, and we will go at once. So that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, if we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice." By the way, Judah's annoyed, right? He's saying, "Dad, come on. If you wouldn't have been dragging your feet this entire time, we could have went to Egypt back and forth twice. Took 6 weeks to make the round trip. So we know that it's 12 weeks already since they went down to get food." Most people believe we're now talking 6 months, 3 to 6 months later. Probably closer to 6 months. They've been having this discussion over and over again. Now, the piece that I wonder, and again, we didn't get to hear the other arguments that they had, was this the first time Judah said, "Listen, I will be personally responsible for Benjamin. If you give me Benjamin, I will guarantee you he gets back. And if he doesn't come back with me, I will bear that shame in front of you until you die. For the rest of your life, for the rest of my life, I will bear the shame of not having him with you." This is Judah's first thing that he has done honorably in this whole story. Now, if you think about it, when we read about Judah and Tamar, so Judah was the one, Reuben said, "I'm going to throw him in the pit, and then I'm going to come and get him out, and then I'll take him back to his dad." While Reuben was someplace, who knows where, Judah said, "Hey, there's the Ishmaelites, let's sell him." And so Judah came up with this plan. They sold Joseph into slavery. Then, if you remember correctly, we read that Judah was not with his brothers and he went to live among the Canaanites, and that's when Judah and Tamar happened. The hypothesis is, and again, we don't know this for sure, that Reuben, after Joseph was gone, Reuben and Judah got into a big fight. And the brothers largely picked Reuben's side, and they kicked Judah out of the family. And they told him, go get out of here, don't live with us anymore. And so he went to live with the Canaanites. We really don't know why he went to live with the Canaanites, but that's the theory. That he and Reuben had a big fight. Reuben, being the firstborn, said, get out of here, and he went to live among the Canaanites. Somewhere along those years, he came back and he lived with his family. After he said, remember he said to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, you are more righteous than I. Many people believe that the Judah that we get to see is the Judah who made the turn when he said, you are more righteous than I. And Judah set his life on a different course. And I'm going to explain more of that next Sunday. But here we have Judah stepping up, and he says to his dad, Dad, I will guarantee you that I'll bring this boy back. And if he doesn't bring him back, I'm going to live in shame before you for the rest of my life. We get to see. I don't think Judah had any idea what he was signing up for. I don't think he did. But he says to his dad, and for some reason, listen to Israel's response, verse 11. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be, then do this. Put some of the best products in the lands in your bags and take them down to the man as a gift. This should remind you of who and what. When he was going to meet his brother Esau, what did he do? Sheep, goats, camels, donkeys, all of those things. He's going to try the same thing. It worked so well before. Let's give the leader some good things. I love what he gave them. I do think if he was in today in our famine, he'd be putting eggs in there too. But he decided, right? Here's the gifts he gives Joseph: a little balm, a little honey, some spices and some myrrh, pistachio nuts. Who would have thought? And almonds. All of these things are common in Canaan, but not in Egypt. So he sends his boys with all these gifts, these pistachios and almonds and myrrh, spices and honey and balm. And then he says what? Take double the amount of silver with you, for you must return the silver that was put back in the mouths of your sack. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and go back to the man at once. And may God Almighty grant you mercy before the man so that he will let the other brothers and Benjamin come back with you. The other brother. He doesn't even name Simon. Thank you very much, Simon. As for me, if I am bereaved, I am bereaved. So Israel, or Jacob, tells his boys, listen, he tells Judah, take the boy, take these gifts, take the silver back. Now, here's the conjecture on the silver. I'm less convinced that this is true, but maybe. So the theory is that each of the boys took one piece of silver with them the first time. There was 10 of them. If they doubled their money, that would be 20. If that's the case, they took 20 pieces of silver to Israel or to Egypt. How much did they get for Joseph? 20 pieces of silver. If that is true, that is cool. That would be something. So here they go. Here's the big debate. This is where scholars have debated for a long time. When Israel or Jacob says at the end of verse 14, as for me, if I am bereaved, I am bereaved. Is that a sign of faith where he says, God, if God is going to take another son from me, I will accept my grief with ease and comfort and I will grieve well? Or is that a fatalistic man who is at the end of his rope who says, as for me, if I grieve another son, I grieve another son. We don't know for sure because we don't get the tone. We don't know how he said it. Did he say it sarcastically or did he say it in faith? Now, if you take note of the change of his name, it would suggest that he was speaking here from faith. If you take Jacob the way he's been, you would say this is an example of fatalism or this is my life, I'm going to lose another son. Verse 15, so the men took the gifts and doubled the amount of silver and Benjamin also, and they hurried down to Egypt. They have no food, so I'm sure they're hurrying. And they present themselves to Joseph, and when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of the house, take these men to my house, slaughter an animal, and prepare the meal. They are going to eat with me at noon. I'll just say this. I hope it was 6 a.m. when he saw them. These poor guys had to go out and slaughter an animal, prepare it by noon. I know sometimes when you go to a restaurant, it feels like they slaughtered the animal in the back of it before you get the food. But all of that except for the one that Carrie works at, right? Mount Joy Diner. Everything is always fast there. So these folks were used to slaughtering animals, but talk about fresh meat. Wow, that is fresh. So Joseph looks up and he sees Benjamin and he says, let's bring these guys to my house for a meal. So the steward goes back, kills the animal, does all of those things. But where is his brother? Verse 17. The men did as Joseph told and took the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were frightened, this is his brothers, when they were taken to his house. They thought, we were brought here because of the silver that was put into our sacks the first time. He wants to attack us, overpower us, seize us as slaves, and take our donkeys. I'm not sure why they're worried about their donkeys. We get to hear a lot about their donkeys today. I'm thinking the man owns the entire country of Egypt and you're worried about your measly little donkeys over here. But maybe they were their prize donkeys that were sported out. I don't know. So he's going to attack us. I will say this. I understand why they were afraid. I would be afraid too. Why in the world is this powerful Egyptian leader inviting us to his house? This would be like meeting a world leader and they say, hey, could you come to lunch with us? They're killing a calf. It's going to be fun, right? And you're like, I don't know. This seems weird. I'm nobody. We have these little donkeys. And I think he's going to kill us. I get it. I would be scared too. Now, they know that, so they decide they're going to do something with his steward versus him. So they went up to Joseph's steward and they spoke to him at the entrance of the house. We beg your pardon, our Lord, they said. We've come down here the first time to buy food, but at the place where we stopped for the night, we opened our sacks and each of us found his silver, the exact weight in the mouth of his sack. So we brought it back with us, and we brought additional silver for us to buy food. We don't know who put the silver in our sacks. So again, they're scared to death. They're going to be killed because of their silver. They're going to be attacked and their donkeys taken. And so they say to the steward, hey, listen, we have the silver. We don't know how it got there. We've actually brought more. You all, his answer is ridiculous. The steward took the men, it's all right, he said. This is the first tip of his hand, the Joseph's hand, and I don't know if he told the steward to say this or he said it on his own. It's all right, he said. Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given the treasure in your sacks. I received your silver. What he's saying here is, wow, guys, don't be afraid about the silver. The silver was in your bags because your God, your father's God, made sure that it got back in there. He doesn't praise some Egyptian god. He says, Yahweh, put it in there. And then he reassures them, I know you didn't steal it because I got your silver. God put it back in there. Joseph and he must have had some conversations between the time that they were gone as well. Then he brought Simon out to them. The steward then took the money and then took the men into Joseph's house and gave them water to wash their feet and provided fodder for their donkeys. Here we get to hear about their donkeys again. And he prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were to eat there. Now, again, Joseph here is a type of Christ for inviting them to his house for a meal. In Revelation 3:20, Jesus says what? Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. Joseph is serving as Jesus here, where he, like Jesus, Joseph is inviting his brothers to come in and dine with him. Again, in this culture, when you got to eat with somebody, that means you were close. That means that this was a very close relationship. Now, when Joseph came to the home, verse 26, they presented him with gifts. They were brought into the house and they bowed down before him. Here we get to see the dream coming true yet again. They bowed down before him to the ground. He asked them how they were and they said, I still try to imagine this. Here they're in this house and this creepy Egyptian leader is once again asking about their dad. Right? He asked them how they were doing and they said, and then he said, how is your aged father you told me about? Is he still living? They replied, your servant, our father, is alive and well. And they bowed down again, by the way, prostrate themselves before him. I think this is the third or fourth time they bowed before him, not knowing who he was. As he looked about, he saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and he asked, is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about? He said, God be gracious to you, my son. Think about this. He hasn't seen. His brother was pretty tiny when he left. He was 17. His brother would have been a young teenager. God be gracious to you, my son. I'm assuming they call him a boy or a son because he was the youngest. You know how sometimes the youngest gets labeled the baby for the rest of their life? They're 70 years old and the rest of the siblings that are still alive call them the baby or the youngest one. I think that's what happened here, is that Benjamin is always gets seen as the baby. Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. Joseph is overcome at seeing Benjamin. This is his brother, his only true brother. He hasn't seen him for what? Now, 22, 23 years. When he last saw him, he was a boy. Now he's a man. Couldn't hold it together anymore. He rushes into his room. I don't know if you've ever had to do this where you've had to rush someplace to cry because you don't want to cry in front of your guests. That's going to look really weird, right? If he's crying in front of these Canaanites. After, verse 31, he washed his face. He came out and controlling himself. I'm sure he was choking back tears. And he said, serve the food. Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed before how they serve the food. This was the weirdest meal ever. Well, probably not. If you ever are in church groups where they shun people and you can't eat with them, this is what it would be like. Watch this. They served, I'm going to put the words in here, who they are. They served Joseph by himself, the brothers by themselves, and the Egyptian servants by themselves. Why did no one get to eat with anybody else? It tells us here, partially. Because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for it was detestable to the Egyptians. The Egyptians believed that they were descendants of the gods. They refused to eat with other people. The priest of the Egyptians would not eat any imported food from any country, nor would they use silverware from any country. So we have this weird situation where the Hebrews, or the Canaanites, as they would have been known to the Egyptians, were trash. They couldn't be eaten with, and so therefore you couldn't eat with them. Joseph is in this weird between place. The Egyptians know that he's not really Egyptian, but he's Egyptian enough that he can't eat with his brothers. So we have three tables set up. Joseph by himself over here, his brothers by themselves, and the servants over here. I don't know if they yelled across the tables at each other when they were having the meal or if they just sat there. Here's the thing that's really cool. We assume that if the children of Israel, Jacob's family, had stayed in Canaan, they would have just been absorbed into the people there. Because what were they doing? They were always marrying Canaanite women. When they get to Egypt for the next 400 years, guess who will have no part of them because they're detestable? The Egyptians. The Egyptians won't marry them. because they're detestable. God's bloodline of His people is protected because they were in slavery for 400 years, and they were in slavery to a group of people who found them untouchable. It preserved the purity and the bloodline of the Jewish people for 400 years. And what did they do in that 400 years? They grew to what? More than 1 million people. There was a lot of people. If they would have stayed in Canaan, would have that happened? Many Jewish scholars says no. They would have gotten absorbed into the Canaanite people, but God pulled them out of there, and He used slavery to protect them during this time. What a better way to protect them than to stick them with people who couldn't stand them. Now, I have no idea how Joseph pulled this next piece off. His servants, what? Sat the brothers at the table from firstborn to the youngest. How did he tell them? The man with that beard, the man wearing that. How did he say? Because they wouldn't have had an idea who these guys were. But they were seated at the table from firstborn to the youngest. And they looked at each other with astonishment. I read someplace, and I forget what it is. The chances that you would set 11 men in birth order by chance is an astronomical number. It's high. Think about it. I don't know what that would be, but it would be high to get 11 people ordered in birth order. They were astonished, which they should be. When the portions were served to them at Joseph's table, Benjamin's portions were 5 times as much as anyone else's. 5 times. Can't imagine his plates. You know, how thick, how deep was that food? He could have sang deep and wide, because I'm sure that his plate was both. You all, Joseph must have planned this out for years, or for months. It wasn't years that he had. This is too detailed to be something you came up overnight. Maybe he did. What is he doing here? Why did his brothers hate him? He was favored. He was his dad's favorite. That's why they killed him. So he wanted to see what? What will my brothers do when they see Benjamin, the favored wife's son, be given and treated unfairly good? Will they have the same? Are their hearts still the same? Do they despise Benjamin and I because we get all the good things? So he gives Benjamin 5 times the food right in front of them. I can't imagine Benjamin got to eat all that food. But I love the next line. So they feasted and drank freely with him. What we don't get to see in that little verse is any hint of jealousy, any hint of anger, any hint of why in the world is Benjamin getting 5 times what we are. I'm sure they had enough as well, since they were eating well. They were having a ball with Joseph. Now, I'm sure the next morning, when they went on, verse 3 says, and as the morning dawned, the men were sent on their way with their donkeys. Of course, we got to include their donkeys. So the next morning they get up, they get on their little donkeys, and they take off. Phew. Can you imagine how fun they must have had? They were like, Simon's going back with us. Benjamin's going back with us. Wow, we're not slaves. We're going to be able to show Dad. We got both of the boys. What a grand time. Their bellies are still full from all that food. And they're just so happy. Full bellies, happy hearts. Oh, but their brother, the little deceiver that he is, has a really nasty trick up his sleeve. Verse 1. Now Joseph had given instruction to the steward of his house, filled the man's sack with as much food as they can carry, kind of like the fries at Five Guys, and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for his grain. And he did as Joseph said. What these men don't know is they have this trap, this ticking time bomb that's going to go off in their sacks. They're out there happy. They're going on their little donkeys, and they're going along. They had not gone very far, verse 4, from the city when Joseph said to his steward, go after the men at once, and when you catch up to them, say to them, why have you repaid good with evil? Isn't this the cup my master drinks from and uses for divination? This is a wicked thing you've done. When he caught up with them, he repeated the words to them, but they said to him, "Why does my Lord say such a thing? Far be it from your servants to do anything like this. We even brought back to you from the land of Canaan the silver we found inside the mouths of our sacks. So why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become the Lord's slaves." My Lord's slaves. So, this is the big, 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 big test. Joseph says, I want to see, what are these boys going to do? What are my brothers going to do when they have a chance to abandon Benjamin like they abandoned me and leave him to die in Egypt like they did me? Are they going to do the same thing over again? He set it up perfectly. Now, here's the question that I want you to wrestle with. Now, we'll wrestle with that question just a little bit more because we have a better chance to wrestle with it in a little bit. What I like about the brothers is that they say, the brothers who have fought, who have deceived, who have all kinds of things going on, they are so convinced that nobody's taken this cup, they don't even ask each other. We don't get any, maybe they glanced at each other, but they say, listen, which I believe you all, why would they do it? Because they're so scared that they need to get back to their dad. They're so convinced that nobody's taken it that they say to the servant, listen, the one whose cup you find with a cup, he will die, and the rest of us will be your slaves. They're so sure that nobody has it. They are so unified. They are so together, very different than they were when Joseph was put sold into slavery. They say to the servant, listen, if the one who you find, he dies, the rest of us are slaves. And what does he say back to them? Very well, he said, let it be as you said. However, he changes the conditions. He says, let it be as you said, and then he soon changes the condition. Whoever is found to have it will become my slave. The rest of you are free from blame. Sorry, free from blame. So here's what Joseph sets it up. He sets it up. He said, oh, I don't want you all to be slaves. I want Benjamin to be my slave. I want you all to be able to go home to dad like you did when you did it to me. He has the ultimate test. Each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning, by the way, to increase the tension. I could just see this in a movie. You know, they go from sack to sack to sack to sack. Just he starts with the oldest and gets to the youngest. The cup is found in Benjamin's sack. Oh, no. Here it is. But what do the boys do? What do these men do? They're no longer boys. They tore their clothes. Then they all loaded their donkeys. Yep, here they are again. And they returned to the city. These men passed the test so far because what do? They don't abandon Benjamin. They don't say, take Benjamin, the rest of us hightail it out of here to ride, go back to Israel. They get on their little donkeys and they head into town as one man. And they're going to defend Benjamin. Verse 14, Joseph was still in his house, I'm sure he was, when Judah and his brothers, interesting, now we get to see Judah has raised to prominence. He's now mentioned it's not Reuben, it's not the 11 brothers, it's Judah and his brothers came in and they threw themselves on the ground before him. Now this time, when they throw themselves at Joseph's feet, it's a different kind of throwing themselves at their feet. They are throwing themselves on his mercy because they need salvation. We come to the Lord. What does the Bible tell us in the New Testament? We will either voluntarily bow to the Lord, or at the last day, there'll be that calling when every knee will bow and every tongue confessed in the neediness and throwing themselves at the mercy of the Lord. That's what you see here with Joseph again as he plays the type of Christ. Joseph said to them, What is this that you have done? Didn't you know that a man like me can find things out by divination? Now, here's the big debate. Did Joseph practice divination? So what they used to do, they used to have these silver cups and they'd pour water in them and then they would look at the reflection and they would look at the bubbles and the ripples and they would slosh it around and that's how they could predict the future. The question that we have, Joseph makes it sound like he uses it all the time. Did he? I don't know. Part of me says he didn't because I can't imagine he did. Was he just playing around with his brothers to convince them that this cup was really important and he was an Egyptian just to keep the trick going? Or did he really use it? He could have. Jacob did some awful things too with idols. I don't know. It's a little troubling. But this story is so full of deceit that I don't know what's true and what isn't. Right? What I do think Joseph was saying is, this cup is really important and you took it from me. This was a very, very important, honorable cup. Judah speaks up. But what can we say to my Lord? Judah replied. What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my Lord's slaves. We ourselves and the one who was found to have the cup. Did you catch what Judah said? You have discovered, what does he say? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. Judah is not referring to the cup because he knows that he and his brothers are innocent of the cup. What he's saying is, God is now punishing us for selling Joseph. It took 21 years, but here's the punishment for what we did. God is finally punishing us for the sin of selling our brother. We are guilty. We're here to serve our punishment. And what does he say? He says, we're all going to be your slaves. He's not abandoning Benjamin like they did Joseph. He's saying, we're in this with Benjamin. We're in this with Benjamin. But Joseph says, man, Joseph just turns the screws on these guys. He does not give an inch. But Joseph says, far be it from me. He says it in such innocence here. Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who was found to have the cup will be my slave. The rest of you, go back to your father in peace. In peace, that's right. That's right. In peace. There's going to be no problem going back to Dad, right? He is giving these guys every opportunity to abandon their brother and go back and do the same thing they did to him, that to his brother that they did to him. Now, some people believe that this next little passage is the greatest plea for another human being that you're going to find in the Bible anyplace. That it is the greatest plea and the greatest marker of nobility and honesty that you're going to see of anybody do. Watch what Judah does. This is the man who sold Joseph. This is the man who did all that with Tamar. This is now Judah, who is what? The forerunner of Jesus, where Jesus is the Lion of Judah. Here's where Judah roars. Let's read it. Then Judah went up to him. So I try to imagine Judah. He's guaranteed his dad that he's going to bring Benjamin home. This man is going to take Benjamin from him. And Judah had a moment to pause because Benjamin slaps him right across the face. Judah then thinks, I don't know how long he thought, but then look what he does. Judah went up to him and said, pardon your servant, my lord. Let me speak a word to my Lord. Do not be angry. Look how honorable he is. Look at how much he's going in here gingerly. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servant, he's now telling him, remember, leader, do you remember when you asked my servant, do you have a father and brother? And we answered, yes, we have an aged father, and there is a younger son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead. He is the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him. It's not like Jacob has changed. He still loves Benjamin more than them. And they know it. Then he said to you said to my servants, I try to imagine the Judah's courage to stand in front of the guy who is the second in command in Egypt and just lay it out. And he's saying, listen, you pushed us to do this. And you said to your servant, bring him down to me so that we could, so I can see him myself. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, his father will die. But you told your servants, unless your younger brother comes down here with you, you will not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my Lord had said. And our father said, go back and buy a little food. But we said, we just had this argument, we can't go down, right? Only if our younger brother goes with us. We can't see this man's face unless our younger brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know my wife bore me two sons. My wife, he has a bunch. My wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me. And I said, he has been surely torn to pieces, which is what happened. And I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me to harm, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to my grave in misery. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up in the boy's life, sees that the boy is not here, he will die. Your servant will bring the gray head of your father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant, Judah, guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all of my life. He's setting up Pharaoh, or the leader of Egypt, and then he brings in the hammer. Now then, please let your servant remain here in my Lord's slave in the place of the boy, and let the boy return to his brother. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? Do not let me see the misery that would come on my father. It's beautiful. Judah lays it out. He says, listen, this is what happened. This is how we got here. And then he pleads for Benjamin's life. He said, I will serve as a slave. Do not let this misery come upon my father. I cannot bear to go home and see my father's pain. Think about how different Judah, the one who came up with the idea to sell Joseph, is at this point. He is pleading for Benjamin's life, and he says, I will take his place. Type of Christ, right? This is the substitutionary life for a life. I will sacrifice my life for Benjamin's life. Slavery for slavery. But what Joseph gets to see, what's really cool, if you really like these kind of things, if you don't, this will not even excite you at all. We see Judah saving Benjamin. Many years later, we're going to see two boys, two young men, Jonathan and David. Where did Jonathan, what tribe did Jonathan come out of? Who was Saul? Saul was a Benjaminite. Where did David come from? He was from the line of Judah. What we get to see in the story of Jonathan and David is we get to see Judah save Benjamin. In the story of David and Jonathan, we get to see Benjamin save Judah. It's going to be repaid many years later. Stuff like that is cool if you like it, otherwise it's not. Right? But what Joseph gets to see in his brothers right here is he gets to see in Judah's response a complete turnaround in his brother's behavior. They do not resent that Benjamin is the favored like they resented that he was the favored. They trust each other. They're not accusing each other of stealing things. They so trust each other that they will stake their honor for each other. They've completely humbled themselves in the sake of their dad's favorite son. They offer to be slaves in his place or with him And when that doesn't work, they offer to sacrifice, to be a substitutionary sacrifice for the brother that is loved by his father. The part that I didn't get to because I knew I wouldn't have time is when Joseph breaks. And that's where we're going to get to tomorrow. It's not going to be tomorrow. Next week. when Joseph breaks. This is all. Judah's speech gets him. He can't do it anymore. And we're going to see when, verse 45, I'll just read the first line. And Joseph could no longer control himself. He told everybody, he told all the Egyptians, get out of here. Right. And then we're going to see, oh, how do you think, when he told all his brothers to come close, and he said, I'll reveal to you so that you know it's me. What do you think he did? Think about that this week. What did Joseph show? What did he do? There was a really easy way he could prove that he was Joseph. The peace, we'll get to that next week, though. What we're going to do today is to say this. Like Judah, all of us can be transformed. We can go from who Judah was to the man that we get to read about today, who becomes the Lion of Judah, who goes from being the man who sold Joseph, who committed all that garbage with Tamar, to the man who becomes the substitutionary sacrifice for his brother. God can redeem you and transform you no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter what you're up against. God can transform. The other thing to remember, like Jacob, sometimes we pray for things and we have a small picture, but God has the big picture. And we're wondering, where are you, God? And we don't get to see the big picture because we're so focused on the little picture. And it's hard because we live in the little picture. We don't live in the big picture. But sometimes that bigger answer is coming. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you that sometimes you give us beyond what we could ask or think. Father, it's hard, though, because sometimes we pray and we don't get the little gift that we think you should give us. Father, help us to look to you for transformation. Thank you for the gift of transformation. Thank you that you continue to push and prod us, and sometimes when we fail the test, we get to take it over again. Even though that's painful the second time, you give us those chances. Father, if we're in the midst of a second or third or fourth test, Father, help us to do better. Help us to look to you to provide that way out of that test that we're in. Thank you so much for your faithfulness. In your name, amen.